the 67th episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank, and I'm your host. Today, I'm taking a slightly different approach from usual. I kind of got onto it because I was asked to give a speech to the Residential Construction Industry Conference, which I gave yesterday. And in preparing for it, I decided to take a few steps back, I guess, from where I've been lately and put my mind back to what it's like for people who have not been online very long and are still really in the early stages. Because really, in a lot of industries, and the construction industry is one of them, there's not a lot of sophistication yet about websites. And I think when you live in this world the way I do, it's easy to think that, oh, everyone's figured out the basics by now. But the reality is a lot of people haven't. So what I wanted to do in today's episode was talk about some common usability mistakes. And rather than interviewing an expert for you, I am an expert in this field. So I decided I'd just answer the questions myself. So rather than asking and answering, I'm just going to basically go through a list of 33 items that popped into the top of my head when I started thinking about common usability mistakes that I still see fairly often. You probably aren't making all these mistakes, but you might be making some of them. So I'll give them all here, and then I will also write them on the blog at frankonlinemarketing.com, so you can go and double check that once you're back in a place where you can actually look at a list or download something. I put them into three basic categories. The first category is the look or appearance of your website. There are some pretty common mistakes that we see there. Second category is content. What are some of the key content issues? And the third category is conversions. Now, obviously, there's some overlap among all three of these, but I think it's kind of a good way to simplify them a bit. So here we go. Key common mistakes that I see when it comes to the appearance of websites. First of all, keep it simple. Don't try and do anything wild and crazy, because all that will do is confuse your users. People are used to certain conventional things, like having the main navigation links, all the important links listed across the top of your website. If you start putting them in other places, a lot of people are going to miss that. So follow the standard norms, the things that people are used to. Yes, you can pretty it up. You can have some beautiful imagery. That's a good thing to do, as long as it doesn't detract from people finding what they need to find. So, one, keep it simple. Second mistake that I often see, and it drives me nuts because I have to argue with website designers with this all the time, is inadequate color contrast. Yes, it can look really beautiful if you use a soft, gentle color palette. But the fact of the matter is, it makes it harder for people to read. And if it's hard for people to read, they won't read it. There's a thing called W3C. So W, then the number 3, and the letter C. Go online, look for a W3C checker. There are these tools that will tell you whether or not there's enough contrast in your website. Make sure that you or your website designer run the designs through those tools, because not only will making sure you have adequate color contrast help all your website visitors, it'll actually make it possible for people who have visual impairments. And the thing is, with the aging of our population, that's a greater and greater percentage of us, so you really don't want to lose them. Now, color contrast is good, but you also do generally want to avoid clashing colors. And again, there are lots of color palette checkers that you can use that will tell you. And in fact, I think even the W3C color checkers will tell you if you're using colors that clash so badly that it makes it hard to read. So do that, okay? Third, big issue is people not making their websites easy to read on mobile devices. The fact is, an increasing share of web traffic now happens on mobile devices, whether that's people's smartphones or their iPads or the little devices, the mini versions in between. You absolutely must make sure that your website can be read and used easily on a handheld device. The word for that is responsive. When you're talking to your web designer, make sure that what they're developing for you really is responsive. And test it out, because sometimes people pretend things are responsive, but really all they mean is it'll just shrink it down, and the letters will be so teeny tiny on the handheld screen, nobody can read it. That isn't really responsive. Test it out. And again, there are lots of tools for free online that let you or your developer check the size to make sure it really will be readable on smaller screens. Item 4. This isn't quite as bad as it was a year ago, but it's still pretty common out there. And that is wasting too much space with a huge picture in the top part of the screen, or with a huge banner and nothing more than the logo. We use a term here called above the fold, which basically means what can be seen in that first screen of content. Above the fold comes from the old newspaper days. Some of you are probably old enough to remember newspaper days, where newspapers would typically be folded in half when they were shown in newspaper boxes or sold. And so the content that was on that first half that you would see was above the fold, the part that was most visible. And that still applies to what's on that first screen on your web page. That is the most important content on your web page. You've got to make sure that the most important stuff is there. And just having a picture there, that's often a real waste of space. So even if you have a picture, make sure it's overlaid with some content that's really valuable to people who come to that site, and make sure that that content can be indexed by the search engines. Because if it's all part of the image, it can't be indexed, so it's not going to help you appear higher in search engine rankings. This is something that you don't want to have happen. You want to be high in search engine rankings. There are certain techniques that you can use that can help a little bit. One is deciding, do you really need a full width banner? Often having a picture even on half of that top part will still give the nice visual that you're looking for, but the other half can have either a call to action, a brief summary of what the website's about, something that'll have a little more impact and be good for the search engines. Another technique that can sometimes be used is using expandable content. So having a little down arrow that people can click under a major point to get more information. Just be sure that when your programmer puts that in, that it's done in a way that the content, even if it's not visible right away, will still be visible to search engines. Don't have them do it using something called frames, which is basically outdated technology. Fifth item under the appearance category, and this I still see a ton of, and that is relying on PDF documents. It is so easy to take all these great documents that you have lying around, print documents, and just convert them into PDFs and throw them up online and think, yes, we're creating great content for people. Well, the fact is, PDF documents are really awkward to read unless they're printed out. And they're totally useless from a search engine perspective because the search engine crawlers can't read the words on there. So what I would recommend is invest a little bit of money in getting those PDF documents translated into a format that will show nicely on your website. There are even some automated tools that I think you can use to convert them. Put the contents from each of those documents up as its own web page, which is really going to help you with your search engine rankings if it's good content. And then you can have a link on that page so people can download or print a PDF version if that's what they want. That's good for you in so many ways if you convert those PDF documents. Number 6, avoid animation. Fortunately, I don't see this too much anymore, but I do still come across websites where you have little dancing characters or things moving up and down. And yeah, it catches the eye, but it looks really tacky and really outdated. If you're going to go for any kind of animation on your website, right now, your best bet is to actually do a video and embed the video. And if you're going to use videos, make sure that you include the details that go with that video about the name of it, the contents, use some of the keywords in describing the video so that it will also help you from a search engine perspective. 7, if you're using video, do not ever, ever have the sound come on automatically. This drives me crazy, and unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of it, I think, especially with commercials now. An awful lot of people are looking at your website in an area where there are other folks around, and they might not have headphones on. They're looking at it in a cubicle farm. They're looking at it in a library. They don't want the embarrassment of having your soundtrack suddenly pop up. In fact, what really drives me nuts is lately sometimes it'll come on in some other screen that I don't even know about, and you have to hunt around trying to find it and shut it off. I get grief all the time from my husband about this. If I'm actually looking around surfing in bed, which I know I shouldn't be doing, but anyway, and then suddenly sound comes on and he gets really cross with me when I do that. Wonder why. Point number 8, thank goodness we don't see this one too much anymore, but never ever use flash and particularly flash animations. It used to be all the rage where you'd have this big splashy screen with something happening before people could get to the real content. You still sometimes see it with restaurant sites or art related sites. I really don't recommend it because A, flash isn't something that's going to help you with search engines, but B, people come to your site for a reason. Let them get their answers promptly. Number 9, make it obvious what is clickable and make sure that the things people expect to be clickable are clickable. So it used to be that all links were in blue and underlined. We've now moved away from that, and I think it's become common enough now that people don't necessarily assume that all links are going to be blue and underlined. Although, if it can fit with your color scheme, I still recommend that. But you have to have the things that are clickable links stand out in some way. So whether they're a different color, whether they're underlined, something to make it obvious that they're clickable. And then there are certain things that people, just because of the way they look, will assume are clickable. So something that looks like a button, people will try and click on it. Often they'll try and click on pictures. They'll click on arrows. Make sure that all things that look like that, that commonly are clickable, are in fact clickable on your site and take people somewhere useful. Number 10, still when it comes to links and clicking, make sure that you have quite a large space around the part that's intended to be clicked, all of which can be clicked. People's hands aren't always all that precise with a mouse, and even more so when they're on handheld devices where they're using fingers. So, for instance, if you've got a link that says, read more about usability testing, all of those words and the space around those words and the arrow at the end of those words, if you click anywhere in there, it will take you to the article where you've got more information about usability testing. Make it easy for people to click on the right thing. Don't make them have to be really precise with their mouse skills. Number 11, don't use teeny tiny fonts. It's hard for people to read. It's especially hard for us middle-aged folks to read. In fact, it was kind of funny. A few years ago, I did some usability testing on a website, and what I found is that the people who complained most about the font size on the website were people between the ages of 40 and 50. That's because between those ages, our vision is starting to go, but we haven't yet accepted that fact and broken down and got ourselves reading glasses or bifocals. Everybody finds it easier to read a slightly larger font, so make sure that the fonts that are being used are easy to read. Again, I think most of the W3C checking tools will also check for font size. Number 12, give people the option of reading long content all on one page instead of having to click through. This is one of my recent pet peeves, and you see it a lot on places like Huffington Post or some of the magazine sites where they'll have 10 beautiful living rooms, but they make you, each one, you have to click from one page to the next to the next. I can sort of see it if you're talking about photos, but when they break up articles that way, it drives me nuts. I shouldn't have to keep clicking. They do it because it will make their overall user numbers seem higher. You know, our website gets 5 million clicks instead of 50 clicks because every person has to click 100,000 times. I don't know if that math worked, but whatever. If you really want to play that game, at least make sure you give people the choice of clicking through page by page or an alternate version where they can see everything at once. That also will help because often people will want to print a document or save a document. They don't want to have to save 10 separate documents. So that makes it a lot easier. 13, you've probably heard this elsewhere. If you've done any research at all on things like writing for the web, make sure your pages are easily scannable. So use white space, use bulleted lists, use bold headlines, use images, whatever you can that breaks it up and makes it easy for people to scan. Sometimes people will read every word on a page, but very often they won't. They'll just be scanning through it, trying to find what they need quickly. Number 14, and this is my last one in the look and feel category, although there are plenty of others I could throw in and probably will if I do a second edition of this Usability Rules podcast episode. So number 14 is have a consistent look throughout. So you want the look and feel to be consistent throughout, and usually that's fairly easy to do now because all the templates that people use are set up now so that you do have the same basic features and fonts and all that throughout. Where people sometimes run into a problem with this, though, is, for instance, if people have to go off your site, let's say, to pay for something, warn them that that's what's happening. So warn them, let's say, that they'll be taken to a PayPal page, and once they have finished placing their order, it'll bring them back to your page. Make sure they know what's happening. Okay, now let's move on to the content category. Content item number one, or usability item number 15, if we want to continue our list numbering. What is your unique selling proposition? This has to be really, really obvious right from the get-go on your website. Why would people choose to buy from you instead of somebody else? Core question, often not addressed on the homepage. You're really wasting a lot of time and effort if you don't answer that question for people pretty clearly right up front. So take some time to think about that. Number 16, poor navigation. Again, you need to spend some time testing out and thinking through how would somebody look for something? How would they search for something? This is where I really recommend doing some usability testing. There are various tools that you can use before you've developed your website, things like card sorting. And again, if you pop on over to my website, I can explain that for you, how that works. But it's really important that the navigation structure you use be clear and make sense to people. And related to that, don't use cutesy names in your navigation links. I remember once doing some usability testing for a bank, and the link that you needed to click to do your online banking, oh, I can't remember now what the word they used was, but it was something totally unclear. They didn't just say online banking, or it didn't just say, as ING Direct does, I'm a client, let me in. That one is kind of cutesy, but at least it's clear what it's trying to do. So make sure that all of your link names make sense. They're simple. Number 17. People read websites in a capital F pattern. Now, this may not be the same in languages that don't read from left to right, top to bottom, the way English, for instance, does. But certainly in languages that do, people will look at the top left corner first, their eyes will go across to the right, then they'll jump back to the left. They'll sort of look down a little bit, look over a bit. And basically, if you look at heat maps, what you'll see is people's eyes generally form a bit of an F pattern. So what that means is you want to put your most important content top left and recognizing and taking advantage of that F pattern. So for instance, you don't want to have super important information running down the right-hand side or in the bottom right corner where almost no one's going to see it. Number 18. This blows me away that you still see companies that make this mistake. Please make sure that you have a phone number, preferably toll-free, on every page of your website and a contact link on every page of your website. And I mean really visible and prominent on every page of your website, because if it's buried down way on the bottom of the page, no one's going to find it. And really, odds are you want people to contact you one way or another. Make it easy for them. Likewise, number 19, include social sharing buttons. There are two different aspects of social sharing buttons that you need to think about. One is buttons for people to share what they see on your website to their social networks. This is really important, for instance, if you, for instance, have a blog. You can put a little tool in there so that it's really easy for people to just click a link and share it to their Facebook friends or share it to their Twitter contacts or whatever social media they're on. You want to encourage them to do that. The other aspect of social sharing buttons is if you are on social media, make sure that you've got clear links in there so that people can follow you in no matter what social media that you use. You want to encourage people to do that because, again, it's just one other way for you to stay in touch with them. Okay, now for a really sensitive one, and I always get arguments with people about this. Don't hide your pricing information. If you're selling something, even if you're not selling it directly online, one of the key questions people will have is, what does it cost? Now, I understand that for competitive reasons, you might be reluctant to put your price in. It may not be the best price out there. I also understand that in a lot of businesses, like mine, consulting, pricing can vary. It can be all over the map, depending on the situation. But at very least, give people a range. Give them an idea of what goes into the pricing. As I said to the people at this construction industry conference, if you're building million-dollar homes, why waste your time and theirs with somebody who's only willing to pay $200,000? Better to make it obvious, yes, our homes are in the price range of $750,000 to $1.5 million, so they know they're not your target customer and you don't waste a bunch of sales time on someone who's clearly not your target customer. Be brave. Show your prices, or at very least, give a range and talk about what goes into setting them. 21. Answer all the questions you can think of and keep adding them onto your website. I had an argument with a fellow that I was co-designing a site with on this the other day. He just wanted to put a list of top 10 questions. Well, that's silly from a variety of reasons. If you know that there are more than 10 questions that people tend to ask or are likely to have about what it is that you're doing or selling, why wouldn't you answer them all? One of the great joys of a website is people can get their questions answered before they call you. Saves you time and money, and it saves them hassle, and actually makes them more likely to get in touch with you because they feel that you've helped them by answering their questions. 22. Show who's behind the site. Show pictures of real people. If you've got a small staff, show a picture of the whole gang of you. Showing pictures of the real people involved builds trust. If you possibly can, get testimonials with pictures of the real people giving the testimonials and their names. The more reality you can bring in that way, the more people will trust you. The more they trust you, the more likely they are to buy from you. 23. Don't just use the words, click here. I still see this all the time. I realized what a mistake it was to do that many years ago, actually, when I sat next to a visually impaired user who was going through a website. And the screen reader technology that he was using, and that is the default screen reader technology, would start off by reading all the clickable parts of the website for him so he could kind of scan the page. And what I heard as he was going through this page was, click here, click here, click here, click here. That was pretty useless for him. And it's not just useless for somebody who's visually impaired, it also makes it much harder to scan and be effective for people who are actually reading the page. You're much better off to use descriptive words in those links, and that again also helps with search engine optimization. So instead of just click here, say something like read more about search engine optimization. All those words can be underlined, and you can even have a little arrow after it. All of that can be clickable to the article. It makes it more noticeable what you want people to click on, and better for search engines, and they're more likely to click. Okay, on to the home stretch here, on to conversions. And again, there's, you know, some overlap here with the other categories, but these things tend to be pretty important for actually making sales or getting subscribers on your website. So the first of those, number 24 in our overall list, is lacking call to action buttons. You want to have things on your website that make it clear what you want them to do next. I recently was involved in designing a website for a client where what he was selling is something that's very complex, and there's no way anybody can just buy that straight online. What they need is to get some information online, but what the guy told me was, what I need is for people to call me. Because once they call me, I can sell them because I can explain the whole thing to them and I can find out exactly what they need. The goal of the website was totally to get people to call. So what we did is throughout the pages and in several places on each page, we have big buttons saying, call now for your free consultation, or questions, call now, or difficult decision, call us now. And of course, with each of those call nows, we had their toll-free number. Now, if a contact us link will work as well for your people as calling, then do that. Say, call now for your free consultation, or click here for to leave us a message. You may want to have a call to action that says on a big button, get your free estimate now. And they click that button and fill in a form and get the estimate. Or contact us. And again, if you make that a really strong, prominent, visible button, it will take them to a contact form. Best and most effective is if you give them some reason to contact you, though. Get your free 15-minute consultation. So make sure that you've got calls to action throughout and make them really stand out. This is one place where you can break away from your color scheme a bit. You really want these buttons not to blend into the background. Second thing that happens with selling stuff online in particular is people get overwhelmed by choice. And there's lots of research that's been done on this. There's a classic example where people were given 17 different jams to try and they would end up buying nothing, but if they only had 3 or 4 to try, they would buy stuff. Same situation on the website. If you possibly can, narrow it down to 3 options. Give people 3 choices. You'll find most people will actually choose the one that's priced in the middle. By only having 3 choices, it makes it much easier for them to decide. You can also then have a button that says, none of these fit what you're looking for, give us a call or send us a message, and we'll figure out something else. You don't want to overwhelm people with choices. 26. Do not over ask. Keep your forms as simple and as short as possible. This is really, really tough for a lot of marketers because they want to get lots of information. They want to know as much about you as possible, right? But the thing is, every question you ask on a web form will lose visitors and will lose prospects for you. So only ask the essentials. In fact, that's why when you're asking people to sign up for your newsletter, the absolute most you should ever ask is their name and their email address. And if you don't even ask their name, you'll get still more signups. There's a pro and con to that because the data also shows that if you use their name in the emails you send them afterwards, you'll get a higher click-through rate by using their name. So there's a trade-off there. But the thing is, you don't at that point want to start asking them a bunch of other questions because that'll just put them off. Hold your horses. Once you've developed a bit of a relationship with them, then you can start asking bit by bit a little more information. But the same thing goes if people are downloading anything or even if they're buying stuff. Don't ask anything more than is truly, truly essential because every form, there's a ton of data on this. Every question you ask will lose business for you. 27. Let people see the shipping information before they start to place an order. I can't believe how often I still see sites where they don't give you this information. You know, guys, if the shipping price is going to scare them off, it's going to scare them off, whether they see it now or after they're halfway through placing an order. In fact, if they see it once they're through placing an order, it's going to make them mad at you. Whereas if they see it up front, they'll just shrug it off and move on. Hiding it isn't benefiting you. It's not getting you more sales. Make sure that shipping information is truly visible to people right up front so they can make their decisions correctly. 28. Do not require registration before you show people stuff. Even if you're selling them something, even if they've decided they want to place an order, don't say, first you've got to register, because that will scare them. It will turn them off. It'll send them running. It will lose business for you. If somebody has been on your site for a while and is requesting something or buying something, then you can ask for registration. Again, keep it as simple as possible. And if you're actually making a sale, don't use the words registration. Ask them the stuff that you need to ask them in order to complete the sale. And then at the end of it, ask, would you like us to save that data so that if you ever come back here again, you don't have to re-enter it? There you're giving them a benefit for giving you the data and not turning them off and scaring them away. 29. Use email addresses for usernames and remind people when they come back to your site that that's what they've done. Don't just ask username, ask email address that you use to sign up. Email addresses are something unique, and so it's a really simple way of dealing with usernames. Otherwise, you're much more likely actually to have duplicates than you would if you just let people use their email addresses. And it's simple. It's one less thing for them to remember. Can be a little complicated if, like me, you've got a whole bunch of different email addresses and so sometimes I have to try a few before I figure out which was the one I'd used to sign up. But still, it's easier than also having to try and figure out what username I might have used. 30. Don't be fussy about things like spaces or dashes when people are inputting things like a phone number or a credit card number. Talk to your programmer. Make sure that it's designed so that they can input it any way they want and it's still readable. It's really irritating because different sites have different formats. As long as it's got the right number of characters, let it work. It can easily be programmed so that it will interpret the same information with or without spaces, with or without dashes, with or without the area code being in brackets. It's a simple programming matter. Make sure they do that. 31. If there's a form error, make it obvious right away what they've done wrong. In fact, the best sites do it as you're filling in the form, so that if you've filled in that particular field correctly, a little check mark appears so you know you've done it right. Or if you filled it in a way that's wrong and won't work, immediately it shows you why it won't work and you can correct it. That takes a little bit more programming effort, but even if it waits till they've submitted the form, make sure that the feedback tells them exactly where the error was and what the error was, and it doesn't make them re-input everything, because that also sometimes happens on websites, and it's so irritating. Which brings me to another point, which is autosave whatever people have entered, so that, let's say somebody's filling in a form for you, then they hear the kettle boiling, and so they pop out of the room to deal with that, and then their three-year-old comes in with a boo-boo, and they have to cuddle and put on a Band-Aid and make all that get better, and they finally get back to your website, and lo and behold, it's timed out. Don't make them start over. Make sure that whatever they've done so far has been saved so they can start again and not have to start right from scratch. Finally, item 33, if it is a multi-step process, let's say people are doing a survey or it's a complex process that's involved to place an order, for instance, applying for insurance online is something like that, let people know where they are and give them some estimate of how much more they've got to do. You can have a little progress bar on the website so that they don't just get frustrated thinking this is never going to end. They want to have some indicator of where it's going to end. Well, that's my list of 33 usability errors for today. Are there other usability mistakes that you see that drive you crazy? If there are, why not call them in or send them in or leave comments on the website? We'd love to see what else drives you nuts and share those tips with other readers and listeners. So if you'd like to leave some feedback, the toll-free number to telephone is 1-866-544-9262. The website is frankonlinemarketing.com. Just click the link to the Internet Marketing Show page and you'll find today's podcast. And if you find it simplest, just shoot me an email, Tema, T-E-M as in mother, A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. I hope you've enjoyed this, and as I said, I will put a recap, well, a full list of these usability tips on the blog, so by all means, head on over there and you can download it and make sure you're not making any of these mistakes. Thanks for listening, and I'll chat with you next week. Bye.